Welcome to Tampa Bay FM's Synergy Connection, where life as you currently live it can be transformed into the life you've always dreamed of. Understanding your synergistic connections is the pathway to your emotional, physical, spiritual, and mental wellness. Let's begin connecting the dots. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the Synergy Connection Show. It is January the 24th, and I have Kristen Gieselin as a returning guest to the show, and our show today is going to be about relationships. If you did miss Kristen in the previous broadcasting show that we did a few weeks ago, I wanted to explain who she is once more. She is a consultant, she's an intuitive, and she's a mindfulness mentor. She has a BA in psychology, an MS in human resource development, and she is certified in Theta Healing, Voyager Tarot, Prep Relationship Education, and Workforce Development. She has literally assisted thousands of individuals in enhancing their quality of life during her 30-plus year career. She's available for personal or business consultations, mentoring, custom workshops, and presentations. And I'm thrilled to have you back with me today. So welcome back to the show, and we'll begin the program.
Alrighty, well, I'm glad to be back, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to be, you know, a guest again on the show. And I'm excited to talk about relationships today. Of course, we're coming up on Valentine's Day, so this is a topic that's going to be on everyone's minds. But we're not going to just be limited to the romantic relationship during our conversation. This is, you know, all of our relationships start with our relationship with ourselves and our relationship with spirit or our higher power or however we find our place in the universe.
That's true. How did you feel when I asked you to do two shows with me on relationships? Because they're going to be back to back. So you're a guest this week, and then we'll do kind of a conclusion of where we go this week, next week. So how did you feel about that?
Well, you know, I have to be honest. That's just my policy. And, you know, I've been having a few challenges in some of my professional collaborations and things. And I thought, I don't want to use the letters, but OM blank blank is what I kind of thought. But then I also know that the universe, I believe, gives me what I need in the moment. Mm-hmm. And so I said, well, I will accept this challenge and I will meet it. And as I've gotten into it, and as we're, you know, I did some prep and we've had some conversation today, you know, it's falling into place really well. So, you know, part of what I've learned about how to do relationships over time is you can't sort of bite the whole thing all at once. You have to take it bit by bit.
It's like, how do you eat an elephant?
Exactly. Bite by bite. And that's kind of the thing, is I feel that you have to just stay in the moment with them and see how things are unfolding instead of having a lot of preconceived notions about how the whole thing is going to go. Because that's not life. You know, we know that. I think because of our own insecurities, frailties, our humanness, you know, we'd like to have like a little guarantee, you know, in our collaborative relationships, you know, at any level. And it's just, that's just not how it rolls.
That's very true. And there are no guarantees about anything, right?
No.
Well, what type of relationship or communication models did you have for yourself?
Really pretty crazy, I have to admit. I grew up in an environment where there was a lot of compulsive behavior.
Such as?
Alcoholism, overworkism. And so what that does with relationships is it sort of skews them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it took me some time in work, I feel, to develop new models for those, you know, for how to interact with people and how to connect in ways that were meaningful to me and the other person. And the reason why I would even bring it up is that I know this is true for many people, that, you know, people are born into environments where they don't have maybe ideal skill sets for how to do relationship with themselves, their higher power, you know, their family, their community. It's just not kind of like perfect at the beginning.
Right.
But I do feel that we can learn. You know, we are awesome learners. When we decide to learn, you know, we can learn a lot. So I feel that we, there are so many opportunities to develop and grow in new ways and not have to be stuck with patterns that might have been unhealthy. You know, in my family, there was a lot of what they call triangulation, you know, where you have, where one, a person would have an issue with one person and then they'd go to somebody else to discuss it.
Like if you don't get the answer you want from mom, go to dad.
Yeah, kind of. But it was just, it was like multi-level, multi-dimensional of that would go on. Mm-hmm. And so it took me a long time before I realized the best way to deal with things was just right to the person. Whenever, if I was having a challenge with somebody, to have the courage to deal with them directly, which also has the most greatest chances of being most efficacious since they're the ones that you need to connect with.
Right,
so, but, right. You know, these kind of things, I think many people grow up with situations that kind of program them for styles of relationship that are not that for their highest and best. So,
like if somebody is in an alcoholic family, quite often they look for a similar type person that has an addiction because they're familiar with it.
Yeah, even if they're not trying to look for them. I mean, mm-hmm. most of the time they're trying not to look for them, but
right.
because of the way we're wired, mm-hmm. It goes into, you know, we're looking for healing, and so then we choose situations that might afford us that. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it works out that that happens, and sometimes the healing might be with that person, or it might be by not staying with that person. You know, there's actually a desire for our spirit to grow, and so we attract to some extent what we need to do that. It's
right.
not necessarily easy or pleasant, but that's what seems to happen.
Right. I can't tell you how many times in therapy sessions with couples, I would find that the spouse, whether it be the husband or the wife, had married exactly their mother or their father, and it seemed like it was destined to not work unless they could figure out that pattern and heal that pattern. But they had attracted exactly what they needed to heal from their childhood.
Yes. And I don't know why, but that just seems to be the way it goes, observationally.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
we might not have a perfect study of how, but definitely. And later, one of the resources that I'll bring up in the second show is Harville Hendricks and his whole sort of theory of intimate relationships is an imago therapy program, and
mm-hmm.
it's related to exactly what we're talking about right now.
Yeah. How did you understand relationships in the course of your spiritual journey itself?
Yeah, well, I feel really lucky that somehow I got keyed into building connections with spiritual information and spiritual teachers. So that I had the privilege to have models in front of me, you know, operating in the world that were embracing their unlimited potential. You know, they were on the course of I am, you know, a human being and a, you know, spiritual being in a human form.
In a human form, yeah.
And they were quite excellent with how they handled themselves in the world. And so I had the privilege to model what they did and, you know, sort of begin to lay down a new story and wire my own way of handling relationships, you know, after these really exemplary models. So I feel pretty lucky that happened for me, and marvel actually at the opportunities that I've had in my life to connect with very high level teachers. We talked about in the past, you know, my spiritual teachers, you know, most of my path. First, I was doing Christian mysticism, and then later got into Tibetan Buddhism. So I've had the privilege to be around people who have dedicated their entire lives to, you know, the practice of spiritual principles, which, you know, really is rare and exceptional.
That is. I think there was a story that you wanted to
relate. Oh, yeah, that's right. Okay, so it always seems like breakthroughs for my own growth and development happen in a crisis moment.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, when you're under stress and you just really feel like, oh, I'm just being crushed as a human. One of those experiences I had was when I was in graduate school, and I was in the very last phase. I was writing up an internship, and it was, you know, this was the last, you know, maybe 5% of that master's degree. And, mm-hmm. you know, if anybody's been to a master's program, you probably had to make some comfort sacrifices along the way. You know, you're trying to do a lot of work. You might have a full-time job. You are, you know, trying to pay, you know, extra expenses because of the education, you know, costs and all that. Mm-hmm. So I'm in that final little part, and I was just feeling so sorry for myself. I was feeling just miserably self-pity. And I happened to be living at the time in a, it was actually like a home, a private home, but my, at the time, my this was my first Tibetan teacher's father was there, and he did not really speak English at all. And I went into the area that was cordoned off for meditation, the non-residential area, and I sat down, and I was feeling this self-pity, and I just thought, this is Nowheresville. This self-pity has got to go. And so I said, okay, I'm going to just try to scrape together energetically the tiniest little bit of bodhicitta, you know, which is feeling that you want the best for everyone else. The focus is not on me personally. The focus is on every other human being and all of the sentience and the animals and all of the ones that have feelings. And I just said, okay, I'm just going to try to scrape together this little bit of energy for that in my heart center. So that was all I could do. I couldn't really say the prayers because I was distracted, but I said, I'm just going to do this one small act of kindness. And I managed to do it. I was scraping that together. And as I was doing that, this old Tibetan master walked by and he looked at me and he said, Yapol, Yapol, which is wonderful. So he could feel energetically what I was doing. That I had mm-hmm. taken a stand for myself and said, I'm not going to be in this type of energy field. I'm going to move myself into this energy field. And, you know, that was many, many years ago. And I can remember the experience, you know, like it was yesterday. You know, it was a profound moment for me.
That is really a neat story. It honestly and truly is. And I think probably most people have had little bits of that from time to time. If they were walking in a park, saw a beautiful sunrise or sunset, you know, maybe saw dolphins leaping out of the Gulf of Mexico, whatever it might be. And for that brief second, there is that connection of amazing energy where you're not in whatever cesspool you might be residing in, but you're someplace else for that brief second. And the more of those we have, the better we will be, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And of course, over time with, you know, intention, you know, we can create those deliberately. Right. And that's what, you know, that's what spiritual practice is really all about, is setting the time aside to focus like that so that hopefully more of the times we're able to go into that frequency. You know, in all of the circumstances that show up in our lives.
I'm actually receiving something as a gift. The place where I spend a lot of my time when I'm not doing other things is all about health and wellness. And one of the things that is going to be happening is we're all receiving through HeartMath this monitor that can help you make sure that you're in that place of gratitude most of the time. Because when your heart is in a place of gratitude, then the energy that you're sending out is much more healing, obviously, than if it's not. So it's very similar to what you're talking about. And you actually program your phone to this, you have an app on your phone that's programmed then to this device that you clip, and you can wear it, you know, just on your ear, and it monitors your heart and tries to keep you in that place where you're sending out all of this healing energy as opposed to maybe other types of energy if you're under stress. So that is going to be a lot of fun, and that's all coming from HeartMath Institute. So if people are interested, they can go to HeartMath Institute and look up how these devices work.
Oh, yeah. That HeartMath system is just really amazing. It's fantastic. It's wonderful. And they've found a way to help people, you know, in the modern world, you know, who may not be, you know, diving deep into a wisdom tradition, connect with that frequency. I forget. I think they're putting them. I think it's a theta. It's a theta brainwave. Right. So they're taking people to theta. And once you start to be able to identify when you're in theta, then you can go there on purpose, you know, more easily.
The training concept is, let's try to stay there the majority of the time. So what would that do politically or worldwide, you know, in terms of conflict, if we could just little by little by little begin to help people get to that place, as opposed to just a small fraction of us that are moving in that direction?
Oh, extremely powerful. You know, and you know, many folks, you know, in a spiritual walks, you know, the phrase of, you know, let it begin with me. And that's really, you know, where the rubber meets the road.
Right.
And sometimes I'm hesitant to promote myself, you know, in the world, but because I'm very focused on let it begin with me.
Right.
You know, what is it that I'm doing in my life today that I could do better? And of course, I do want to share my understanding and my skills with others, but I also never, ever want to lose sight of what is my next level. You know, where do I, you know, where are my areas for growth and leading breakthroughs and so forth?
Right. And so many times I think, you know, businesses even today, they start with more of an altruistic position. I want to do good in the world. But then they get caught up in the financial gains. And so they lose sight of maybe what the original intent was because of the finances that get involved. And then that can lead to the political implications. And so we lose our way.
Yeah, it's really a dance between the frontal cortex, you know, and the back brain. And the great thing about the theta is that's going to keep your back brain relaxed so that you can use your frontal cortex, you know. And, you know, we are understanding more and more just really how connected we all are. That, you know, even though there are divisions, you know, we're in separate bodies. I want to say the psychosocial network, energetic spiritual network between all of us, you know, is becoming more and more apparent, you know, as we learn more about science and physics, you know, particularly the subtle energy matrix, you know, is presenting itself, you know, in more and more different types of ways, so that we can see that when we are able to stay in that gratitude, love, truth frequency that Tess was talking about. There were like four different things I think she mentioned that the angels have all said, yes, definitely, this is all the same. The frequency is essentially the same thing. We're using different words, but we're going to the same place energetically. Then we can, it's like we can do no wrong in that place. Whatever we do when we're in that energetic frequency is going to be a positive creation.
Yeah, it's for the best good of all involved.
Yes.
And you're out of that fear base, that false evidence appearing real, because that's what leads to all the complications. As soon as we jump into a fear-based type thinking out of a gratitude type thinking, you know, then we're predicting the future in a negative way.
Yes, that is correct. You know, predicting the future in a negative way. And it is a challenge to stay in the moment. You know, in our culture recently, in the last little chunk, you know, with Madison Avenue gaining so much, I would say, sway or pull, a lot of people have become over-focused on the physical realm. And, you know, I think part of what Tess was talking about in terms of recognizing your angelic self here on the planet is that in order to really actualize our full potential as human beings, we need to be conscious that we are not tied just to the physical realm of what is currently appearing.
Right.
And that is a little bit of a paradox where you're needing to operate in a functional way on planet Earth with your body and your finances and You know, all of the things that it takes to sustain a human body on the planet, but to simultaneously stay aware of the energetic presence behind all things, you know, that's a little bit of, you know, being able to hold two things that maybe sometimes appear to be in conflict, not to hold them not in conflict.
Right. One of the things that I've been seeing, and I know you have too, is, you know, with all of this focus right now on the political situation in the United States, is our television stations, our newspapers, those people who actually read a newspaper anymore, but, you know, if they're going on to a blog, if they're going on to any other place, it's so divisive, you know, and being able to walk away from that. I don't even turn the news on anymore. Maybe an occasional to see what the weather is going to be. And I can do that just going to the weather, you know, on Google to see.
Right.
But there, it's the energy that's coming out of these interviews is just terribly divisive for those of us that are listening, because if you're either going to argue with whoever's talking, you know, in your mind, or it's going to create more and more fear. And I used to say years ago that unfortunately where we were headed with journalism on any level was almost like the National Enquirer. Who has the worst story to tell, because that's going to get the most viewers or listeners, rather than trying to stay maybe in the middle of the road. The BBC still does a pretty decent job of that. And sometimes NPR, National Public Radio. But it's tough. It's tough out there, and people get stirred up and they head down incorrect paths.
Yeah, absolutely. I've thought a lot about this. Specifically, I think because we are in a time right now where there is an appearance of economic challenges just because of, you know, prior causes that we've engaged in as a global population. Not that we all know there's enough resources for everybody on this planet. If you, you know, look at any
if
kind of data.
Yeah,
we know that. It's just a matter of working in a different way with our own obscurations, you know,
right,
as human beings to make sure those resources are used in ways that support everyone. And, you know, of course, this is a very big paradigm shift that's going to take, you know, time. But I feel like a lot of the what I would call identityism, instead of focusing on that we're all human beings, we're all living on one small planet, is driven by a fear base that I will not have enough.
Right.
And it's very insidious. It's very subtle. And you see it outplaying, you know, in even people's over-identifications with their cultural identity. Like, I love it that I have, you know, Gaelic background. You know, I've got the red hair and the whole thing. And I'm into, you know, I've done some, you know, a little bit of research into their spirituality. And it's wonderful. But, you know, I'm first a human living on the planet. First, I'm a human living on the planet, and then I'm into those other, you know, variations on a theme, you know. And I think that Tess said something about this in the presentation,
right,
about, you know, how we are identifying ourselves is extremely important.
Right, because she talks about the fact you can live, I believe it was in Indiana, but you're still part of the United States.
Yep.
And you can be in the United States, but you're still part of North America. So
yep,
it kind of keeps evolving out until you realize that you are a part of the universe.
Right.
You are a part of the galaxy systems. And so we have so much more that we're connected to than we ever, ever think about.
Absolutely. And we don't even know what that could mean yet. I mean, we're still very new in terms of understanding what's going on with any other life forms and that sort of thing.
Right.
You know, we're still pretty at the beginning of that. So just being able to sort of connect more with our inner life and not just the outer life,
right,
I think is a big key to having the relationships in the outer work better.
Right. That's very true. What about soul contracts? What do you think about those?
Yeah, you know, I have, I know it's a very popular concept right now that we have like a soul contract so that when we get back to planet Earth, we're going to have a certain agenda, sort of. And I think that, you know, like all kind of memes or things that go around, there's a chunk of truth to that. I'm just not certain exactly how specific we are in between. From what I gather, there's sort of like, you know, karmic winds that blow when we are between lifetimes. And our ability to direct where we go is relative to our level of spiritual development at the time of our departure. And so some people may have more direction over where, you know, at least what their frequency is. You know, at the time of death, if you're in angry state, that is not going to help you go to a higher frequency, you know, in right. a more harmonious environment. So that I know is from Tibetan teachings, and it makes total sense to me. You know, you could be a wonderful person and just have a big anger attack at the time of death, and that is not going to serve you when you're trying to, you know, get through the bardo and go wherever you're going. You know, whether you're going to be going into a helping realm, or you're going to come back and be reborn, or whatever you're going to do. So that's really the obstacle, you know, is these kleshas or negative, you know, emotions that we experience. Mm-hmm. So I do think in terms of the idea of a soul contract, that it can be helpful when we are encountering challenging issues in this lifetime to think, I may have, yes, indeed, signed up for this at some level. Okay, it may have just been that you didn't do the right things to not get that in this lifetime, okay? And so now you're in a situation. Now, if something horrible happens, a horrible tragedy, like you use the example of Christopher Reeves, you know, mm-hmm. here's a man, peak of his career, mm-hmm. building a life, wonderful family and all that, and now he's faced with, you know, a certain type of a lifestyle that he really can't change. He could be very, very sad, and of course everybody would grieve their former life and go through an emotional process, but ultimately people have to make a choice about how they are going to view the situation. Mm-hmm. Am I going to say to myself, what can I do with my life with the resources that I currently have available to me? Or they can lament what they do not have. And that is where, you know, the idea that you of a soul contract may make it easier to accept the circumstances mm-hmm. that you're currently manifesting. You know, I don't think we get a checklist in between lives. You know, yes, I'm going to learn this. No, I'm not learning that. Right. I don't think it's quite that cut and dried. But I do like the idea of saying, what can I learn from the experiences that are presenting? Because the learning is how we stay alive. Mm-hmm. You know, the process of learning is where we gain our vitality. And what brings energy, you know, into our lives.
Right. So kind of going back to Christopher Reeves for a minute, I know, you know, based on some books that were written about his life with his family, that he approached it after he knew he was going to survive more from a very constructive gratitude perspective, which I think then helped him stay happy most of the time. I mean, he had challenge after challenge, but, you know, he had another child with his wife. And it was interesting that they both died fairly close to one another. I mean, he died, and I think she died within a year.
Yeah, they definitely, I feel like, which leads to one of the other questions, they definitely had a very close karmic connection.
Mm-hmm.
Very close.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Yeah, I noticed that as well.
Yeah, that was quite fascinating. So then, soul contracts, maybe, maybe not. How do you think we process disappointments when they do happen? Because I don't know of a single individual who has ever had a perfect life from beginning to end. You know, you have relationship issues, you have, and within that, the workforce, you can have tons of disappointments there. Career choices, maybe. I know I started out, many years ago now, but I started out thinking I wanted to be a nurse, only to realize after my first year of college that nursing was nowhere near where I wanted to be. I couldn't even give a shot to anybody because I realized it was going to hurt them, and so that was an issue. And psychology called, and I went that direction. Many, many years later, I had a friend who was having an issue with allergies, and she couldn't breathe. And she had the needles, and she had the injection fluid that I needed to give her. And she said, you have to give me a shot. And I had to confront that fear of giving her a shot. I had never given a shot in my entire life until then, even though I was in nursing and practiced. And they used to have us practice on oranges because they said the orange, the outer coating of the orange was very similar to the texture of the human skin, that when you pierce it with a needle, you really have to jab it. And I remembered that, at least. And the first attempt to give her a shot, the needle bounced. And I was like, oh my God. And then that kicked in. And I thought, no, you hold it firmly and you throw it like a dart. And I was able to give her the shot. And it's the one and only time that I've had to give a shot, but I knew I could do it then. So it's just interesting how, to me, how our careers, how our relationships, how everything evolves little by little by little. But when you meet a disappointment, then, you know, how do you handle disappointments from your perspective?
Right. It just means like an appointment that wasn't met. Like I was really supposed to be somewhere else. You know, that just wasn't the thing for me.
Right.
You know, whatever the thing was that I was hoping for or aspiring to. But you know, sometimes it's more than just a disappointment, you know, that we encounter. There may be shock and trauma at different points mm-hmm. in our lives, and that can start to drive a storyline. Mm-hmm. So I do feel that we can go back and look at things that have happened without staring, because staring doesn't really help us necessarily.
Right.
But we can go back in and look at what we might have learned or how we coped through difficult situations, whatever it may be, and see that there was an upside to the downside. Now, it doesn't mean we want to continue to create that same circumstance over and over again.
Right.
And in theta healing, you know, we ask, when we look at where people, when people are identifying a belief, you know, beliefs are not created erroneously. Mm-hmm. You know, they come out of our experiences. And so, especially if a belief gets embedded and then we start to outpicture that belief in more than one environment, you know, we start creating that again and again, it can become solidified as a story. So then we have to go down and find out what was really going on with that person, you know, at the time of the shock or trauma, whatever it was, and find out how they got through it. And in theta healing, most people are able to say, you know, this is what I did, this is how I got through it, and this is what I learned. I learned how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Now, sometimes you don't want to keep doing more and more of that, okay?
It worked. But you knew you could do it.
You knew you could do it, you got through it, and it is a strategy that's in your bag of tricks. Maybe right. You don't want to keep having that again and again in your life. You're done with that, okay?
Right.
You learned that lesson, you know how to do that, and then we forgive and we release the people that were involved in you learning that lesson, so that you're not holding resentments or angers or any negative energy toward that, which also helps disconnect the pattern.
Right.
Okay, because the more negative energy that you have toward anything that's ever happened, the more you're still connected to it.
You know, I think a lot of people, and I just want to, I guess, maybe make this clear. A lot of people do not understand they have these patterns in their life. And until they do release it, you know, look at it, decide they don't want it as part of their bag of tricks, as you say, until that happens, they keep experiencing this, you know, if not the same thing, very similar things over and over and over again. And they kind of stay stuck in all their goop because they don't see that they're, you know, it's like, why me? Why is this keeping me stuck all the time? And it's only with that understanding or that insight or that light bulb in their head, you know, that goes, aha, now I get it. And then addressing it, you know, that they have to be able to say, I don't want this anymore. And that's what Tess and I talked about a little bit. It's like, yeah, we can all be mechanics. We can all be heart surgeons. We can all be whatever it is we want to be. But we make those decisions. And so it has to, you know, arrive at that decision moment of, I don't think I want to do that anymore. And then letting it go and moving forward.
Right. And I think what I'm not sure people realize at large how much dominion they have over their stories.
No.
And that's where, you know, you hear the word empower. Mm-hmm. And truly empowering somebody is helping them see how to recreate their story in a way that serves them.
Right.
Rather than having stories that aren't really working.
Right.
And unless you, and I think it's the sort of thing that you don't really get until you start doing it. Okay. Mm-hmm. When you haven't tried it out, it doesn't sound like it would really make sense that you could just say, this is the way my story's going to be, and then reality starts to shift.
Right.
Seems like very airy, fairy, magical BS, right. Sort of. But it's not.
No. Did you ever read, I mean, this is a book that probably not very many people have ever even heard of, but it was called The Neverending Story. Did you ever?
I did not read that, but I have heard of it.
It was one of the most amazing children's stories because it's how this little boy confronts his fears. And so he writes the story, and the book is written this way, where you read it one direction and then you turn it around and read it the other direction, because it's how he turns his life around.
Oh,
and
how
so
fun.
It's just a really fun way for kids to symbolically see that, yes, you can be going in this direction and people can bully you, which they were. His mother had died. His father was working a lot of hours, and he was by himself a lot. And he ends up in a magical bookstore where he sees this beautiful, I mean, it was just an amazing book. And he kind of picks it up and then runs with it to an attic and begins to read it. And as he reads the book, he becomes the character in the book. And he has to confront his fears, you know, about bullying, about his mother's death, about everything. So it's fabulous. I'm sure that it's available on Amazon for anybody listening that wants to maybe have that as a read-along with a child. But it is how they can confront their fears. And it's just called The Neverending Story.
Right. And you know, there's a lot of... It's sort of like... how can I put this? We want to acknowledge and love ourselves as we are currently, but always leaving the open space for understanding ourselves more and more and having more and more, I would say, free will, more freedom, more peace, you know, over the course of time.
Mm-hmm.
So I love myself as I am, and I'm also entertaining, you know, exploring more and more possibilities of what my life, you know, can out, you know, how it can out picture.
Right.
So it's sort of like you don't want to say, I don't love myself as I am because I'm not what I'm going to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's
mm-hmm.
that doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. You know, in fact, it doesn't even work.
Right.
The more we love ourselves as we are, the more we can manifest or move into what we desire, and the more we attract what we desire.
A part of this reminds me a little bit about, you know, these, there are amazing cafeterias out there. I don't know where any are in our area, but I know I've seen them in the past where you can go through and you can go, oh, I think I'll try a little of this time and a little of this and a little of this and make an amazing salad, you know, or whatever it is that you're looking for. But I think if we can stop and look at ourselves at any point in time, whether we're in our teens or whether we're in our 80s, and just say, what would I like to add? You know, that little bit of flavor maybe that I want to add to my life now. And what would that feel like? And what would that look like?
Right. And those key words that you're saying, what would that look like? What would that feel like?
Mm-hmm.
The more we bring our senses into mm-hmm. it, the quicker whatever it is that we're aspiring to is mm-hmm. going to, we're going to manifest that. It's going
right.
to come quicker. And we use that in the theta healing process, you
mm-hmm.
know, and the word creator is used, although that's not my personal favorite. You know,
mm-hmm.
I vibe more with infinite intelligence,
mm-hmm.
but to ask that we bring creator in, which to me, creator is, you know, we're just signaling that creative power in the universe, inviting it in,
mm-hmm.
you know, show me on a day-to-day basis how to live my life, knowing how this feels, you know, according to creator,
mm-hmm.
How this feels, how to do it on a day-to-day basis, when to, how to,
mm-hmm.
and those kind of details.
Mm-hmm.
And then whatever it is that you are looking for just starts to appear.
Right.
And it does seem like magic, but it isn't, because you have contracted essentially with the energy of the universe and another human being for this situation.
Right.
And it does have a magical quality, and it definitely happens in a high frequency state. And I just like to share, after the two two times after Theta Healing classes, I have actually won something. When I took, because I was in a high frequency state. Mm-hmm. Last year, not this November, but the prior November, I won a Kindle Fire. And then this time, I just took a Theta Healing class last week called The Game of Life. And I went to deliver some flyers for an event I'm working on to Sacred Lands in St. Pete, Florida. And I won a t-shirt and a CD. There was live music there, which I didn't anticipate. There was food, you know, but I was vibing in a high frequency state at that time.
Right.
So, and I had a little glimpse. The universe gave me just a little glimpse that I might win. And I did, you know, it was just a fleeting little boop, you know, I was like, I think I just might win this prize.
What a fun thing to discover that we can co-create with the energies that are out there.
Right. And like you, I know you've shared with me that there are times when you feel that the angels are helping you. Mm-hmm. That because you are trying to do something to elevate the consciousness of others, in a committed and regular way, that you're being supported in that mission. Mm-hmm. And I believe in that. I believe that there is a consciousness, an infinite intelligence that lives here with us and us in it. Mm-hmm. And that when we are aligning with its wishes, we are supported. And, you know, that's a big jump for a lot of people. I realize that. Mm-hmm. But I've been operating under that premise for decades. It doesn't mean that my life has been easy all the time, but having that premise in the background, I feel, has helped me continue to work through obstacles,
right,
and work through negative karma that came to fruition in my life,
right,
and sort of stay the course,
right,
and keep looking for what is it that I can refine within myself, mm-hmm, that's going to better align me with my highest good and the highest good for everyone else.
Right. I totally agree. I mean, there are many things that you and I have discussed that have happened in both of our lives. And it's like, as long as you continually work to try and stay in alignment, with centering yourself, with being grounded, you know, into the earth, by being receptive to divine energy, you know, you get more and more opportunities, at least, to see what life can be. And those glimpses become more regular, I think, so that you can kind of go, oh, okay, I think I am beginning to get the gist of all of this. So very, very interesting. Let's see, I wanted to ask you about karmic patterns, and does it get into your DNA?
Well, here's the thing. We carry DNA from prior generations, people who, you know, our grandparents, our great-grandparents.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't
probably
know.
Back to caveman days,
yeah,
really.
Right. And so I do believe there's messaging in there.
Okay.
And we do learn about this in Theta Healing, but I had a sense of it before, just like a native sense about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just the fact that my ancestors had to deal with really harsh cold winters and, you know, the Viking DNA is back there.
Mm-hmm.
And I tend to be a young, you know, pretty young woman. And it's like, well, where does this even come? How did this happen? You know, where did this come mm-hmm. from? Well, I do feel like it's in the DNA. And I'm okay with that, but I also don't want to be run by patterns that are in my DNA that are not serving me currently.
Right. So you don't want to just say, oh, that's the way it's going to be.
Exactly.
Right.
So if there's something that's in my DNA, or let's say I had a great grandmother four generations back that was burned for being a witch. You know, that is still in my DNA
mm-hmm.
memory.
Mm-hmm.
And now, oh, does that mean now I don't want to be a healer because I'm afraid I'm going to be burned up?
Mm-hmm.
No, I don't want that pattern.
Right.
So those are the kinds of things that are not necessarily, you know, like when you're looking at relationship dynamics or even the dynamics with yourself, it's important, I think, to look at things on more than just your psychology of this lifetime, which is sometimes what happens. And I don't know why I knew or how I knew this, but as a child, when I was like 8 years old, I think I mentioned this before, I was sitting in a car with a bunch of other kids, and the woman who was the driver was the parent of some of the children, and I was staying at her house that afternoon, and she asked everybody, well, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I said, oh, well, I want to be a psychic psychologist so I can help people if they have problems from past lifetimes.
I'm sure she looked at you like, hello.
Yeah. And so I have no earthly idea, honestly, where that came from. You know, there was obviously some glimmer of something from a different lifetime, because there was nobody around me that was putting that in my head. So that just came right from some vague recollection of a different experience that was still with me.
You know, I'm just thinking that there are a number of other kinds of examples too, like, you know, generational, everybody's a doctor, everybody's a lawyer in my family, everybody's a minister in my family. And, you know, maybe that's not what they want to be.
Yep.
But because the expectation is that you will carry on. Or even worse, in my dad's family, there were a lot of people that all had the same illness.
A lot of the men
developed Parkinson's or something.
Yeah.
And so it was the expectation. And then your cells actually listen to that.
Yep.
And it's like, oh, I'm now 65 years old. It's time for me to get Parkinson's.
Mm-hmm.
So how many people are in families where there's cancer, there's cardiovascular disease, there's neurological illnesses? Right now, so many people are focused, because we're aging as a population, on Alzheimer's. How many people believe that because it's in my family, I will get it? And I actually listened to a TED Talk that I don't think it's brand new, but it was about, I'm planning on what will happen when I get Alzheimer's. It's something to that degree. But it was beautiful, because her father is in the middle of Alzheimer's. It does run in the family. But what she was doing is she was planning on a productive level on how she was going to cope, because she was learning skills now that would allow her to be happy if she does get it. And she kind of refers to it as, if the monster wants you, it will get you. So rather than running in fear, all right, I'm going to cope and hope that it doesn't ever want me, but if it does, then I have these skills in my toolbox on how I'm going to cope with this disease. I won't even know that I'm coping, but I will be. And I thought, well, that was an interesting approach, because most people are going to approach it from, oh my gosh, what can I do to prevent it? And she was saying, it may get me, mm-hmm. but this is how I'm going to live with it.
Right.
So that was a little bit of a different hiccup on how to handle things.
Right. Well, I think that's very wise, mm-hmm. because mostly, you know, sometimes they say, you know, what you resist persists.
Exactly.
Sometimes by accepting something, you have a better chance of not having to have it karmically.
Right.
Now, I also believe that you have perhaps predispositions in your genetic program, but mm-hmm. that doesn't mean they have to activate.
No. And you can change, you know, change it through diet, change it through exercise, change it through mindfulness.
Right.
You know, change it through nutrition.
Right.
Not just diet per se, like, you know, the Mediterranean diets out there and keto diets out there. But what is it that you're fueling your body with? How do you heal on a cellular level? And there are ways that you can do that.
Yeah, and the big way, first of all, is creating the possibility that you don't have to have that outcome. You know,
exactly.
Getting it clear in your mind. Because
right.
it's very hard to follow through behaviorally with mm-hmm. things if you don't have, you have to, I think that was what I put on the post. You know, mm-hmm. you have to, sometimes you have to see it to believe it.
Right.
I mean, believe it to see it.
Right.
You can't,
right.
It's hard to manifesting sometimes, or to get your behaviors lined up the way you want, if you can't invest in, oh, well, maybe I don't have to get Alzheimer's, you
right.
know, then you're not going to do the behaviors that right. support not getting Alzheimer's.
Well, and, you know, I guess if you wanted to say that you were driving from, say, you know, where we live in North Pinellas County to the far end of South Pinellas County, there are multiple ways of getting there. So if the destination, which is the end of our life, is in South Pinellas County, how we navigate to get there is up to us. You know, we can take Highway 19, which is a lot more dangerous, or we can take Belcher Road, which is less dangerous, or we could take, you know, some of the little side streets. And with the attitude that I'm going to arrive, at the end of my life someday, but how I want to navigate there is up to me.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, recently my mom moved out of a townhouse into one story. I'm 55, so she is actually just turned 76. Mm-hmm. So, you know, she's like, you know, I don't need to do stairs every day anymore. Mm-hmm. And so she's just simplified her life. You know, right. She downsized a little bit. She's in a one floor condo. And yeah, so she's taking responsibility for making her life, you know, easier for the next chunk of time.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Do you think that we meet people in this lifetime from past lifetimes?
I totally do. I totally do.
How do you recognize them?
You know, some people, you know, there's a lot of, I would say there's different ways of that. You know, I believe that my past partner and my son were both with me in prior lifetimes.
How did you recognize it?
I actually, that came to me through assistance with somebody who was a psychic, you know, at the time, you know, many years ago when I first started getting interested in, when I first started going for readings and getting interested in the intuitive world, you know, in addition to the spiritual world. Mm-hmm. And there were certain dynamics in the relationships that were, I couldn't understand it. You know, it's like, okay, I'm doing this, this, and this. Why does this keep happening? Mm-hmm. And because there were things from prior lifetimes that were still at play. Okay, they were still influencing the relationship in this lifetime. So it doesn't mean, you know, and it doesn't mean this or that. It doesn't mean they should not be in your life. It doesn't mean they should be in your life. It's just sometimes when you're not really getting clarity on the relationship dynamics, that can definitely be, you know, a part of it. And I totally believe that.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So if you recognize somebody, I know this has happened to me any number of times in my lifetime. And I think when the recognition is there, it's either maybe to finish out, you know, if there's a conflict, or maybe there's not even much of a conflict. Maybe it's just to finish out a relationship that was amazingly wonderful. And maybe there's been a lot of times where you weren't able to be together, and so then you interact, you know, and all of a sudden you are together again. But in many instances, I think it is more conflicting, and the conflict needs to be resolved. And once it's resolved, then, you know, maybe that relationship does end through death or through divorce or through just parting ways. And I've had friends that, you know, I thought would be friends for a lifetime. I'm sure you have too. And all of a sudden something happens and it ends, and it was just, both of you were in a place where it just couldn't go any further, you know, so you needed to go separate ways. But I have always found that very, very interesting.
Yeah, I think that the point that you're making right now is something that is sometimes people find challenging, that when you get to a place in a relationship where you're seeing that it's not really supporting where you want to grow in your life, mm-hmm. and you have to say, okay, I think that relationship, that connection is not one that I want to continue. You know, that can be a tough decision. Uh-huh. But I also think it's really liberating, you know, if you are at a place where the relationship isn't really, it's not really supporting you, and you don't see it helping you manifest the future that you're, you know, desiring to create, to let that go. And that's easier said than done.
Right.
But I think when it is done, people realize, you know, oh boy, whew, you know, I could have done that sooner. Why didn't I do that sooner? A lot of times is what people say, but it takes the time that it takes.
It does. And I think if it's with a child, you know, it's even tougher because you're always going to be, we just dropped the mic, people. So,
whoops.
But I think that, there is always going to be a challenge, you know, like with children. When do you let go? You know, and in some cases we have adult children in our lives until the end of our lives that we're still either mothering or fathering. And you know, the adult child needs to stand on his or her own feet, you know, probably. So their relationships are tough. They're just tough. And I'm glad that we've got a back-to-back week here where we're actually going to be talking, you know, about relationships for 2 weeks in a row as we approach Valentine's Day. And like you said, it's not about always a loving relationship. It can be, you know, like a relationship with a coworker or a relationship with yourself or a relationship with a parent that, you know, you're still working through. And both of my parents are deceased. And even until the very end of my father's life, it was contentious with us. We were always, I think he was a Taurus, so he was very headstrong and it was his way or the highway. And with my background in therapy, I think it just aggravated him no end that I could see what was going on and I wouldn't participate. I just didn't engage in it because that's not who I am. I don't engage with angry people. So I don't know how your experiences have been, but probably similar.
Well, yeah, I think, but I also think it's a belief, you know, and I'll just invite you to say, you know, my relationships are easy and run smooth. Mm-hmm. And manifesting more of the types of relationships that support your highest good in your creative development. And so obviously, you know, program of relationships are difficult as a program. And we, most of us probably would agree to that. Mm-hmm. We probably, most people have experienced that, but it doesn't mean it has to be that way.
Right, right.
So, yeah, it's like a redo on our program for that.
Well, and, you know, again, I mean, as a therapist myself, a lot of the couples that I worked with were reenacting what they had seen between their parents.
Exactly.
And so once they recognized that they were just in this play and they could say, okay, this is the closing act and I don't want to do that play anymore, then their relationship changed.
Exactly. When they were able to step out of the pattern and see mm-hmm. it for what it was and say, oh, I don't have to do that pattern. I could do something different.
Right. And probably one that would be a whole lot happier in the long run. So, well, a final question for you is, do you think that we are in soul groups?
I do think we're in soul groups. And I know that with my Tibetan teachers, the older teacher now, her mother came back as her granddaughter.
Oh, fun.
Okay, so I do think that we travel somehow in these karmically connected groups. And mm-hmm. I don't really understand all the details. But, you know, it just seems like, I'm sure there are people in your life, more than one, where you look at them and you're like, I know you, mm-hmm. you know, and they're and I believe these are people that we are perhaps traveling with through time, and we have made some kind of bonds or connections or energetic ties with these people,
right.
And they seem to pop up, you know, again, you know, in
right.
the future.
Right.
Yeah.
There, without naming names, there is a gentleman that might be listening to this program. And about 6 years ago now, I became friends with him. And the more we spent time together, the more I realized that I did know him. And so at one point, probably 6 months into the relationship, we were together. And I said, you know that I know you, right? And he goes, yeah, I'm feeling that you do. And I said, I can tell you exactly where we knew each other. And I was being given this information at that moment. And so I explained how we knew each other. And we had been in a monastery, actually in France, together and spent a lot of time together. And so that kind of blew him away because he actually had a past life reading. And in that past life reading, he was told that he was in France at the same time that I'm telling him, in a monastery.
Wow.
And so, you know, the person that was doing the past life reading confirmed months before I told him that this was how we knew each other. And so this soul group is true. And sometimes it's not going to be a biological thing. It's going to be separate individuals that are then interacting throughout a lifetime, that they come back into your life at the right time that they're supposed to be in your life. And maybe you have spent years looking for each other. But when it happens, you know, you just recognize that, oh my goodness, you and I have been together many, many times.
Exciting.
Yeah, very exciting. Well, I want to thank you for being my guest again. And of course, Kristen is going to be back next week as well. And we'll finish out the conversation about relationships. I think we're going to be talking about how are you kind of concluding next week's?
Well, we're going to get into principles rather than personalities and tips and resources.
Okay.
And I'd just like to give you my contact information. I can be reached at 727-678-3761. On Facebook, I'm Kristen Geislin, M.S., and my email is kristingeeslin2@gmail.com.
Thank you for being here today, and thank you, audience out there, listeners out there, for staying with the Synergy Connection radio show. Have a fabulous week, and make this your best life.